You are listening to the Freight Buyers Club, a home for those interested in international trade, shipping, procurement, logistics, and air freight. In fact, all things supply chain in the Americas, Asia, and beyond. This podcast is brought to you by your host, Mike King, and produced in partnership with Demerco Express Group, a global 3PL that specializes in managing logistics to, from, and within the Asia-Pacific region.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Freight Buyers Club, which, as you just heard, is produced with the support of Demerco Express Group. I'm Mike King, and you can find this episode and many more on all podcast platforms and on YouTube, along with a bunch of shorter video interviews and news insights. You can also find all this content on www.thefreightbuyersclub.com, where you can subscribe to receive every episode direct to your inbox. Today, we're zooming in on all things Trans-Pacific as we try and understand some of the trends and challenges that are affecting freight buyers right now, particularly in relation to air cargo dynamics and what's going on at both ends of that supply chain. We'll also be updating you on the latest at the Red Sea. Well, because that's impacting shippers everywhere, isn't it? And I'm delighted to be joined by two guests who come at all of this from very different origins, both geographically and professionally. First up, we have one of the world's best air cargo editors and news getters, and a former colleague of my own, in fact, albeit really, really briefly. From Vancouver, Washington, outside Portland, Eric Kulish, air cargo and supply chain editor at both Freightways and American Shipper. How are you doing, Eric?
Hey, doing great, Mike. Thanks for having me on the pod.
Always welcome. And next up, we have an expert on Asia-Pacific trade calling in from China. It's Kathy Liu, Vice President of Global Sales and Marketing at Demerco Express Group. Kathy, welcome back. Where are you right now? Last we heard, you were on a fast train to Wuhan, which really does sound like a movie to me.
Hi, Mike. How are you? Yeah, I'm now back to the office. I just back from Wuhan yesterday, yeah.
So you're in Shanghai, are you?
Yeah, I'm in Shanghai now.
Perfect. Okay, let's get going. Eric, if I may start with you. You recently did a great analysis of the air cargo market. It's all been rather unseasonal in terms of demand and rates, which been going great guns, certainly if you're selling space, that is, not so great if you're buying it. Can you describe for us all how this has played out this year? It's all been a bit of a surprise, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has been. I think a lot of logistics professionals have been caught by surprise by how good the market's been. You know, it's been quite resilient. We hit bottom last summer and the market started to slowly climb, but it's really been at a high level for the last 5 months, double-digit growth since December. And there's many reasons for that. The inventory correction and rebalancing is in place. A conflict in the Red Sea, which has led to some mode shift to air, e-commerce out of Asia. And you got to remember that the comparables versus last year are pretty easy. Last year was a weak year for volumes were down. So any growth looks good against that. But we're starting to see some signs or suggestions that the market could be easing off a little bit as we head into the summer. For several months or weeks now, there's been strong demand out of the Indian subcontinent and Southeast Asia tied to the Red Sea diversions and poor ocean reliability. But that started to subside in mid-April, possibly due to the Muslim holiday period, but it's still higher than in some locations than a year ago. And I think one of the interesting things is the volume stood stable for the month. And really even though those markets were dropping, what we saw was a surge in flour volumes out of South America for Mother's Day holiday. And I think that kind of leveled things back to kind of that 10, 11, 12% growth for the month. So we've got a lot of capacity coming in on the passenger side for the summer travel season. So that's going to put some pressure on rates. But overall, the market's doing pretty well.
Presumably, this has been reflected in those first quarter results from carriers, from forwarders.
Absolutely. It's tracking almost in the same way that the recovery's not fully, you know, locked in, but first quarter earnings and cargo revenues for either airlines or logistics companies were markedly improved in the first quarter year over year. So some of the European carriers saw cargo revenues that were off by 16 or 17%. Some of the U.S. carriers like Delta and American were off by similar amounts. Air Canada was off by 9% versus last year, but then Korean Air was minus 5%. And and so on. But that's a market improvement from where we were last year, or even in the fourth quarter, where year-over-year revenues were off by 25, 30, 35 or more percent, depending on the region of the world.
Kathy, how has this unseasonable demand and unusual rate situation, how has that been playing out at your end of the market? Have people been caught off guard? Has space been tight? Is it all about China? Is it more general across Asia, this export drive? In your latest AP Freight report, like Eric just mentioned there, there's a lot of talk about e-commerce. There's also mention of e-cigarettes and movements to the Summer Olympics in France. What's going on, Kathy? How's it look from your side?
Yeah, there's a lot of things goes on during the first quarter, which is actually unusual. Normally, first quarter for export market from Asia is always very quiet. But this year is a little bit different. I think it's mainly driven by the e-cigarettes and also the e-commerce. So although most of the e-commerce actually is out of China, also including e-cigarettes, but we see the overall Asia market rates is growing. The main reason is because of, you know, there's some of those carriers, they are actually transit somewhere. Like, for example, Singapore Airlines transit in Singapore, like Evergreen, China Airlines, those Taiwanese airlines, they transit in Taiwan. So when they carry the first leg from China into the transit point, they already fully occupied the second leg of this capacity. So which also impact on those origin, like from Taiwan, from Singapore, from Hong Kong, the space. So the demand overall is still from China, but because of those transit points, so we see the overall the Asia major gateways are all fully occupied during first quarter, especially I think after Chinese New Year in March, there's a little peak season compared with years ago. So for the, I think for the e-cigarettes now is getting more and more popular because more countries has released, let's say, the restriction for the e-cigarettes. So we also see it's occupied a certain percentage in the market out of China, especially into US. That's what we see. For the Olympics, I think it's like a short term because now they start to prepare the Olympics in France. So some of those materials or some of those commercial goods now is on the way to support the Olympic game, but it will not last him for that long. Yeah, that's what we see here.
Let's look at that e-commerce demand a little bit, if we can. Two names keep coming up, Kathy, Temu and Shein, which I've probably said incorrectly. You can maybe put me right here. Why are they big players in air freight all of a sudden?
I think Shein was already promoted overseas market for years, but just because of during the pandemic, everybody get more and more used to or rely on the online shopping. So, and the Shein is always, although they are produced in China, headquartered in China, but their main market always in US. So just for an easy example, we cannot buy Shein in China.
Really? I didn't know that.
Weird, right? Yeah. Yeah, if you're online, you see all those are dollar sign that we cannot buy it in China. So their main focus is US market. So during the pandemic, more and more, let's say consumers, Americans, they get used to buy it online. So Shein getting more and more popular in that market. And Temu is another story. I think they just started kick off their overseas planning since last year or end of 2022, something like that. But they promote quite aggressively. So we know the products actually different from Shein on Temu. Most of those items are very cheap compared with, for example, Amazon. But they are offering like end-to-end service to the end customer in US. Everything is including like including the transportation fee. So the end consumer don't need to pay any freight. And there's also, I believe if it's correct, there's no, let's say, membership charge, this kind of thing on Temu compared with Amazon. So they are quite successful now in US and the demand is, let's say, much more compared with Amazon for air freight. But for sure, there's another reason is because of different from other e-commerce players like Amazon, like Alibaba, they all have their own overseas warehouse in US. And the last mile delivery always from that warehouse close to the consumers to make delivery. So most of their frequently ordered products, they can use ocean freight already to save the inventory in overseas. So in this case, it's in US. But for Temu, it's different. They don't have any overseas warehouse. So every order they take, they ship directly from their warehouse in China. So it means all those products, they need move via air freight. Ocean freight will not be accepted by the consumers.
How is that sustainable, like economically, or how can you remain competitive when you're reliant so much on air cargo?
I think then what we see is it's only like the initial stage when they like to attack the market and then to occupy the market share. So now we see gradually Temu now also planning to have the overseas inventory in the coming years. So they are also looking for the warehouse in US in the future. So what we see that maybe during next 2 to 3 years, they also will gradually reduce the air freight volume to switch to ocean freight, especially after they get all those big data analysis to understand what kind of products is most frequently be ordered by the consumers, then they are able to make that.
It's a very interesting business model. So there's some echoes there of how Amazon got established as well previously.
Right.
And as you said, there's some very aggressive marketing. I did download the Temu app just to see what it was all about. And I haven't bought anything yet. I don't think it's really aimed at me, this fast fashion. I mean, maybe it should be, but I certainly could do with some new clothes. But I am told I've now got 10 free gifts and I haven't bought a thing, but very aggressive marketing. I did some research on this. So Temu only launched in September 22, but now has 51 million US customers. Shein's fashion and lifestyle app has achieved, I think it was 14 million downloads. So they're serious rivals to Amazon. Even by last June, according to a US congressional report, the two e-tailers were responsible for almost 600,000 packages per day arriving in the US. We're assuming that has increased substantially this year. What impact is this having in the US, Eric? Amazon really does have a new rival in town, doesn't it?
Yes, Mike. Shein and Temu, also AliExpress and the other Chinese e-commerce sellers are shipping about 1.4 million packages a day into the US, according to US Customs. And you know they're able to do this by taking advantage of the US rules that allow duty-free entry for shipments with under $800 in value. So what a lot of these Chinese platforms like to do is fly the packages into multiple gateway airports that kind of act as a multi-tiered fulfillment center network with the lower parcel zone charges than just opening one central U.S. fulfillment center and then distributing from there. So they kind of drop the packages into the U.S. postal network or FedEx network or a regional courier on arrival. And we're basically seeing more of this split zone shipping to distribute more widely into the U.S., basically straight from the airports. And then they don't need to store in multiple warehouses and they can avoid the drayage at U.S. ports. But it's been quite congestion's not really a problem at the airports per se, but U.S. Customs is quite overwhelmed. Their clearance systems weren't really intended to facilitate 450 million packages a year direct to consumer. So, you know, there's some worry on U.S. Customs' part that these small packages don't undergo the same security checks, or it's harder to track them and to put them through the system, either for data collection or for security screening for problematic or dangerous shipments. So this is a larger shipment that goes through a freight forwarder.
So U.S. airports are managing to cope with all this extra traffic. Customs is struggling. Presumably someone's making money out of all the last mile deliveries then.
Yeah, I think a lot of these kind of regional couriers at the big gateway airports, road feeder services, but you've got these forwarders that turn the package over to a FedEx or a UPS, but now these regional couriers do the customs clearance and the final mile delivery right to the customer's door. And they also benefit, I think, from what Shein and Temu do in China, where they pre-sort and pre-bundle packages that go into the same zip code. So they don't have to do it when it gets here in the US. So that simplifies their job on the inbound side.
Just looking at that Trans-Pacific air freight lane, Eric, the passenger capacity was a bit slow coming back post-COVID. Chinese carriers are now increasing services. Any sign that U.S. carriers might follow?
Yeah, the passenger market between the U.S. and China is still kind of below pre-COVID levels. There's, you know, ongoing trade disputes between the U.S. and China, and the Chinese were pretty slow to come out of the COVID restrictions and kind of didn't let the U.S. carriers in And so they weren't happy about that. And now they're also not happy that some of the Chinese carriers have an advantage flying over Russian airspace as a shortcut, while Western sanctions because of the Ukraine war prevent the U.S. carriers from flying. So the volumes or the number of flights is up to 50 per week now, just recently raised. But I think there was about triple that amount before COVID. So I don't see that coming back real soon. And so from a reciprocity standpoint, we probably won't see U.S. carriers, passenger guys going into China much more than they're currently situated.
So that leaves a lot of emphasis on the freighter operators then. Have we seen any new services from them?
Yeah, I mean, we definitely need more wide-body freighters, especially on that lane. The capacity there has gone up incrementally or very flat versus what the passenger intake has been. But there's been hit and miss, little bits of capacity coming on. We know CMA, CGM, Air Cargo, the subsidiary of the ocean carriers, going to launch a couple 777 freighters operated by Atlas Air, possibly in the second half of this year. Maersk Air Cargo, another ocean carrier, we know they have a couple 777s on order, possibly could come online this year. I would suspect they put them in some kind of Asia connected route. So there is some capacity coming in, but it's kind of hit or miss or ad hoc.
Do you know, as far as we can tell, are the logistics companies, are the air freight operators, are they all seeing this as a short-term bonus, this Chinese e-tailer business that we're seeing now? And are we expecting this to fizzle out as we have a more mature logistics setup comes into place with warehousing in the US, et cetera?
That's a good question. I don't know the answer to that. I think there's some thinking that this is going to last or be a gravy train for logistics companies, but there's also some cross currents. And like you said, if they set up in the US and pre-position more inventory, there may be less need for air freight. They'll probably still use it heavily, but not to the same extent. But there's also regulatory issues. And, you know, where does Shein and Temu get there? Do they use any forced labor? So US Congress is kind of looking at that very carefully. They're under a lot of scrutiny. And just the overall trade environment between the US and China, if there's more tariffs or so on. So it's hard to say, but for the time being, everyone's, you know, assuming it's going to keep going at the same pace for a while.
Okay, let's just look at the Red Sea if we can. The closure of the Suez Canal to most container shipping has added at least a week to transit times to Northern Europe from Asia. It's added around 2 weeks to some Eastern Med destinations by sea at least. It's also sucked up a huge amount of global container shipping capacity. And we've been talking about this as like 7 or 8%. But when you listen to some of the Q1 financials from the shipping lines, they're saying we've got a wider area of attack around that Middle Eastern area with a bigger area of risk. So I think it was Maersk CEO Vincent Clerk was talking more 15-20% of the global shipping capacity is being sucked in by this conflict. One upshot of that, schedule reliability, it did collapse. It improved slightly. Rates shot up far higher than anyone expected. Then they came off after Chinese New Year, but they seem to be on their way up. Cathy, how has Demerco been rearranging supply chains to cope with all of these events in the Middle East? And how has it affected customers? I mean, I guess it depends on the type of product you're moving and how quickly it needs to be in market.
Yeah, I think it all depends on what kind of products. So for those low-end, let's say traditional goods, maybe the value is very low and it's not that seasonal. So for those customers, they are okay with the longer transit time to move via the ocean freights to the Cape of Good Hope. But for a company, we are major handle like those electronic products and also those high-tech products. So they still have certain requirements on the lead time. So for us, we will give them two solutions. One is sea air to move ocean to Dubai and then connect air freight out of Dubai to the final destination. That's one. And another is the China-Europe Railway. So the China-Europe Railway, actually the lead time is still quite controllable within, let's say, 14 to 16 days. And also, we also have the last mile delivery solutions for them. So it can solve a lot of problems of our customer. And also, we know that a lot of, like, let's say, US and Europe headquartered customer, they can't use the railway moving via Russia and Iran. And we have also alternative routes, actually go via the Black Sea it can avoid Russia and Iran, and there's still the transit time is around about within 30 days. So still it's shorter compared with the ocean freight. So we also offer this solution to those customers have the requirements to move via the blockchain service to Europe.
Cargo always finds a way. Eric, disruption in the Middle East, some airports and carriers have been doing rather well out of all air or sea air solutions, haven't they?
Yeah, I mean, as Kathy mentioned, coming out of Dubai, people like Emirates are really benefiting, Qatar Airways. But you've got a lot of volume out of the Indian subcontinent, out of Dubai, out of Bangladesh, Sri Lanka, you know, trying to do some of those sea air combinations, as she mentioned. There's also been some of the analysts have talked about, you know, kind of a truck air hybrid where maybe out of Vietnam or somewhere else, you truck a shipment down to Bangkok or maybe Singapore or something, get on a plane there, and that way kind of bypass the Red Sea situation and save a little money.
I did have a chat to someone at Bangkok, actually, and they're doing really well at the moment. They've seen some fantastic volumes this year. There's so much disruption to supply chains. It's hard to see where it all goes from here. More recently, we saw Iran seize the ship in the Arabian Gulf. Somali pirates have become more active. I said, mentioned earlier, Houthi attacks have been expanded into the Indian Ocean. There's a threat into the Eastern Med as well. On top of that, Iranian airspace is now off limits. Russia airspace was already off limits to some carriers. Eric, you've been covering this market. I don't want to age you here, but 20 years more or less, around about the same time as me. Outside the COVID pandemic, has there ever been so many different, what's the phrase, different balls in the air? If you're trying to plan supply chains or buy space, it's been easier in the past, hasn't it?
Yeah, and you forgot the drought that is constraining shipping through the Panama Canal. And then we've got the potential for a major dock worker strike on the East Coast. Lots of things going on for supply chain managers to deal with. I think the operating word or phrase is, you know, ship early.
Ship early. Kathy, right, we'll come back to what that means for the shipping peak season in a moment. But Kathy, how are you helping people at Demerco? How are you helping people plan around all this?
What we see is that besides the e-commerce, for the rest of the high-tech electronic customers, the most of the time, the shipping schedule always runs about September for any like MPI, those new products launch. Everything is actually will be planned in that period. So we're familiar with our customers' circle time. So we will get in touch with them to get the forecast in advance. Just like now, we already actually get in touch with all of our key customers to get their volume forecast start from September. And then we will plan the capacity already from now to make sure that the supply chain will not be impacted during the peak season of the air and ocean freight market.
Is there going to be, we just touched on it there, well, let's go straight to that, in fact. What is happening, let's say, the ocean peak season, right? So for people who aren't familiar with the ebb and flow of global trade, container shipping peak season normally happens in Q3, air freight peak season normally happens in Q4. Are there signs, certainly on that shipping front, that we're having an early peak season for shipping? Are people shipping early? Because some of those numbers into Europe and into the US, they seem heightened. I don't know. What's your view on that? Are your customers shipping early?
Yeah, I think this year it's a little bit unusual compared with, pre-pandemic time period. It's not really the traditional season to reflect to the market. So we see that some of, we mentioned earlier, some of those customers, they ship earlier just because of they like to avoid tariffs. It's not really the life cycle changed. It's just because of, let's say, the regulations forced them to plan earlier. That is one thing. Another thing is because, e-commerce is always occupying the market. It's just like what we have seen last year for the air freight, that 50% of the air freight cargo out of Hong Kong and Southern China actually, 70% actually is e-commerce. And out of Shanghai is 50%. So which is occupy a very large percentage. And that with this, you very seldom to see the slow season compared with before. It's always at a very flat period and then getting peaked. There's not really low season anymore. So in order to grab the capacity to secure the space, most of our customers will plan to ship earlier, especially to avoid those period like those Black Friday, those big promotion days of the e-commerce, trying to avoid to grab the space during that very high peak time period.
We'll just take a short break. We'll be back with you in a second.
This podcast is proudly produced in partnership with Demerco Express Group, a trusted provider of global shipping and contract logistics services in Asia, Europe, and North America. Demerco's particular strength is in Asia, where it gives shippers the freight capacity and local market expertise to streamline freight movements to and from the region, particularly for trans-Pacific lanes. With 130 forwarding and logistics locations across China, India, and Southeast Asia, Demerco connects Asia with the world like no other global 3PL. You are listening to the Freight Buyers Club.
Eric referenced there the possibility of dock worker action at US East Coast and Gulfport. This is the ILA. President Harold Daggett has threatened that there might be unless there's a new settlement for the labor contract, which runs out at the end of September, there could be problems at those ports. We're just concluding Trans-Pacific contracts at the moment, Kathy. Was that a factor in those? And are they all being settled now?
I think if you talk about ocean freight, I think most of the contract already for the TPEB already fixed in later April or latest mid of May. So everything already fixed. But on top of that, I think I still see that the shipping liners trying to add on like GRI, those PSS, those kind of different surcharges to meet this kind of market change. And especially recently, there's very serious shortage of the containers, empty containers in China. So even you get space, but you cannot get containers. So somehow we see the story repeating like the COVID time period. I think it's just because of the transit time getting longer due to the Red Sea crisis for certain routes. So the returning of the empty container, let's say the efficiency getting slower. So we see this is also another serious issue here, which will change, or let's say to push the ocean freight rate getting higher.
Yeah, I mean, we're seeing those surcharges on that Asia-Europe trade as well, which is obviously runs at a different cycle. That's more of a January to December-January annual contract rather than the Trans-Pacific is, as you say, April-May for another year. Slightly different cycle. Eric, that shipping dispute or that potential threat of union action at US East Coast ports, I'm sure American shipper FreightWaves is going to be following this from all modal angles. Are you seeing a US West Coast port shift of cargo, as far as you can tell, to avoid potential threat on the East Coast later this year?
You know, I think it's a little too early to tell, but I think, you know, there might be some volume shifts starting to be planned, but it's hard to know for sure. I don't think for any air freight diversion, that wouldn't happen until we're, you know, right up against the gun. So, but I think by the summertime, if there's not some resolution, people will start making plans accordingly if they can, if their carriers can accommodate it. And one other thing I'd point out is that one other reason we might be seeing some early shipping in the U.S. or ordering is that tariffs from another aspect, if we might get to this later, but if President Trump or former President Trump were to win re-election, he's threatened some tariffs. And so there might be people trying to get their goods into the U.S. before those tariffs go into place next year.
Yeah, well, let's look at those tariffs. Donald Trump has been talking about new tariffs on Chinese imports of 50%+, 60%+. It's hard to put a definite figure on it. He's also talked about a universal tariff on all US imports of around 10%. Kathy, how is that viewed in China? Is everyone off to Mexico? Is Demerco helping them move there? What's going on? Are people looking at these tariffs as serious? I mean, we're really talking into the following year now, 2025, but it's a serious threat, is it?
Yeah, I think start from last year, more and more Chinese manufacturers, they are going to set up plants in Mexico. I actually just back from Mexico 1 month ago. Yeah, we see a lot of Chinese factories there already, and especially for the electronic vehicle. I think although the tariff is increasing for import into Mexico, but compared with the risk import into US, I think it's still, let's say, controllable, or it's still lower compare, yeah, in view of the risk management. So still, I think a lot of Chinese investment over there. And I think Mexico will be not only for US market, but also for the Latin America market, for those Chinese companies.
These Chinese exports, there's a bit of a question mark about where this demand's coming from, because it doesn't always tally up with GDP growth. This has come up again and again in the Q1 financials from various shipping companies and logistics players. So people and politicians keep raising this as well. They're talking about new tariffs, as you mentioned, Mexico. We're talking about the US. People are talking about this in Latin America. They're also talking about it in Europe, that Chinese companies, often state-subsidized, are dumping a product in other locations, in other geographies. How is that covered in China? Is it seen as an issue in China? And is the problem of excess capacity at factories, excess output in China, is that a problem? Because the economy is not in great shape, is it?
Yeah, the economy in China is still not that good compared with years ago, because really we see there's some of those production lines moving out. Yeah, but I think that's the trend, because just like what you mentioned, for those factories, they're moving the production line to Mexico. Actually, the final customer is still in US. So they just use a transit point to decrease the potential risk or the tariff. But still, they like to move the business and they still like to grow in the business in those target market in US, in Europe, and in South America. And I think for the electronic vehicle, China's, let's say, manufacturers still is occupied a very high percentage on the global supply chain, from end to end, from the automotive parts to those batteries, even to the raw material of those batteries of those parts. So Chinese manufacturers, for sure, they will play a very important role for the entire supply chain for the EV. But just how we move out, how we export those goods smartly to reduce the possible tariff at the lowest level. Yeah.
I mean, all of this throws up some interesting economic dilemmas for politicians. In Europe, just for example, there's urgent requirement or there's an urgent push for a green transition. And obviously, electrical vehicles play a big part in this. We're also struggling with inflation. But the political direction of travel is pushing back against imports of cheaper electric vehicles from China, which would help with inflation and also improves that green transition. So it's a rock and a hard place. Is the green transition more important, or is protecting your green technology companies an interesting dilemma? How's that playing out in the US, Eric? There's talk of tariffs on Chinese imports from Mexico now, isn't there?
Right. Well, as you mentioned, former President Trump has talked about a universal 10% tariff on all imports. And of course, he's going hard against Chinese imports. He could raise them even more on Chinese imports. And he's threatened to put a 100% tariff on Chinese electric vehicles coming out of Mexico. So it's very interesting. He seems to be interested in violating the very U.S.-Mexico-Canada trade agreement that he implemented when he was in office. And because, you know, you still have to follow the trade rules as far as, you know, content origination. So if the Chinese companies are complying, then you would think they would be able to allow it across the border. But even some Democrats are interested in blocking these Chinese automobiles because of the concerns that they'll suck away manufacturing or electric vehicle manufacturing and battery manufacturing in the U.S.
And Joe Biden has just put on a bunch of new tariffs on various metal products out of China as well that are imported into the US. So it's not just a Republican ticket, higher tariffs and more protection. It's certainly the Democrats didn't get rid of any of those US-China tariffs throughout this Biden administration. Those calls for more protectionism, I mean, it's not even just the US, is it? I mean, it seems to be spreading. Kathy, are you planning for a patchwork of tariffs around the world over the next few years? Is that a sensible thing to plan for?
I think in short term, it can be. Just like under the China Plus One, we already see a lot of those factories, doesn't matter from overseas or from China, they start to establish the plants in Southeast Asia, especially for like Thailand, Vietnam, India, Indonesia. So what we see that in future, because China still have the full supply chain for all those high-tech electronics and also some other traditional goods. So what we see that for the regional traffic will be still growing, such as from China supply the material, raw material to Southeast Asia. But for the matured market like Europe and the US, they will be supplied the finished goods from Southeast Asia compared with China before. So for the regional traffic, it will be still there. But for the long haul, I mean, to US and Europe will be mainly maybe supplied by Southeast Asia market in the future. And for sure, for Mexico, it's another area. But Mexico so far now still mainly focused for the automotive industry, which we see there's a growing trend. And then for the, let's say, finished car, then it will be supplied by the Mexico manufacturing into US market.
Just on a general level, Cathy, how are you viewing the macroeconomic environment as we look through for the rest of the year? A lot of those indicators seem to be improving in terms of GDP growth, in terms of trade forecasts. Are you positive about the rest of 2024?
Yeah, I'm actually very positive for the rest of 2024 because we already see that a lot of those industrial is recovering. And besides e-commerce, actually, we already see the second half year is quite optimism for, doesn't matter, like a semiconductor or those high-tech industries. It's all growing, start from second of, half year of, yeah, of 2024. So that's what also we see the market trend that it will be getting a peak, especially during the last quarter. So we are quite confident of the coming months regarding the demand for the market. Yeah.
Eric, I've been interviewing economists for about 2 years and they've been calling recessions in the US throughout that period. US consumers keep surprising us all, don't they? What's going on?
Yeah, that's a good question. The U.S. GDP growth was 1.6%, I think, in the first quarter. That was a bit short of projections. But as Cathy mentioned, manufacturing in the U.S. Is finally growing. But inflation is stubbornly persistent. It's ticked back up and is now about, I think, 3.9% year over year, you know, coming down from the COVID peak. The Federal Reserve has decided to keep interest rates in place now because of that worry about inflation. And now there's, you know, less optimism that the interest rates, you know, that governs mortgages and everything else in the U.S. will be lowered in the coming months. So that could crimp spending power for businesses and consumers. And interestingly, some economists, notably Morgan Stanley, the investment bank, is raising the odds of a medium impact recession after, you know, we didn't even get a mild recession last year with all the hand wringing. But now they kind of raised the odds that maybe 25 to 30% chance of some kind of a recession, more than they previously thought.
That's a bold statement. A bold statement after those economists have been wrong for quite consistently for 2 years. All right, we can't finish up without just briefly looking at the shipping market, Cathy. We've had record deliveries of container ships this year. Everything's hanging on what's going on in the Red Sea, haven't they? We'd see a rate collapse if we didn't have problems in the Middle East, wouldn't we? Is that how you view it?
Yes, somehow yes. But also we see that recent years, let's say, shipping liners always control the market rates via the blank sailing. So once they see the demand is decreasing, then they will cancel a couple of those schedules and then to create some demands in the market. So it's not really like before, the market rates are really linked 100% with the demands. It's somehow also related with the supply. So we see some of those new vessels will be there, I mean, by the end of this year to the beginning of next year. So means the supply will get in more in the market. But it doesn't mean, let's say, it doesn't mean the rate will decrease. So after the pandemic, we see all those shipping liners, they like to remain the rate level at a certain level. They don't want to see it getting decreased that quick. Actually, same like airlines. So although it will be, I mean, if the Red Sea crisis be removed, then the market will be getting, let's say, back to the old tradition. But we don't see it will be immediately impact on the rates.
I think we've got quite tight supply chains as well at the moment. So if we did see this acute normal Q3 peak, it'd be interesting to see how the container shipping copes with that and whether there's any implications for air cargo. I imagine there may well be. But for now, Cathy Liu, Vice President of Global Sales and Marketing at Demerco Express Group, and Eric Kulish, Air Cargo and Supply Chain Editor at Freight Waves and American Shipper. thanks for joining me today on the Freight Buyers Club.
Thank you, Mike.
Thank you, Mike. My pleasure.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Freight Buyers Club, produced in partnership with the Demerco Express Group. Please subscribe and follow on your platform of choice or sign up for delivery to your inbox at thefreightbuyersclub.com. This podcast wouldn't have been possible without the fantastic editing of Karen Ball and Tom Matthews. And finally, thank you all for listening. The next episode will be with you soon.